Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 17, and I'm your host, Stephen Hall, and I'm joined once again by Abner. How's it going?
Hey, it's good to be back after a nice break last week.
Yeah, we got the week off because of July 4th and convenient, or I guess inconvenient, weather on my side of things and your side of things too. But on my side of things, it started storming really bad. And so there was no way we could do this without hearing, like, I think my roof in this room is really thin, so it's like it would have been
that
pretty.
That would have been a nice ambiance to the show. That might have been interesting.
Yeah, it would have been like the, you know, the sleeping sounds feature on Google Home. Could fall asleep to the podcast. So this is Alphabet Scoop, as you all are very well aware at this point. So I figured it might be fitting to start the show off with some Alphabet stories.
Yeah, so this week saw the graduation of several X companies projects. So you should all know about Google X, which is now just X and under Alphabet. It's called the Moonshot Factory that made things like Waymo and Google Glass originally. This week, Project Loon, which is the balloons that go high up into the stratosphere and connect and broadcast LTE connectivity, and Project Wing, which is a drone delivery service that is basically for delivering consumer goods or emergency supplies to remote areas. They are now their own Alphabet companies. So they're moving from underneath this X incubator into their own companies with CEOs and structures, and they're just independent divisions now. So these companies have been in development for years. I think it's 2012 and 2013. And they are finally ready to be their own businesses to help and contribute to the Alphabet bottom line.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, X, as you mentioned, is kind of the moonshot factory. And so some of the projects that have come out of X have been kind of like crazy ideas at first. I think this Project Loon is probably one of those that seemed crazy at first. X typically, you know, I think they're in the business of de-risking. So like they're basically taking these early stage technologies and companies and trying to make them, you know, like they're technologies that are kind of crazy enough ideas that it's not possible for them to be a business in their own right at the current, at the current time. And so it's kind of like an incubator to like help get these teams to the point where these could possibly be standalone businesses. And as you mentioned, Loon and Wing are now two of the X companies that are graduating out. So other companies that have also graduated out, the most notable of them is Waymo. So self-driving car project at Google was part of X for the longest time. It eventually got rebranded as Waymo and folded out of X and became its own Alphabet company. So Loon and Wing are joining Waymo, and then also Verily, and then Chronicle. And Chronicle is, I think, cybersecurity. And then Verily
is life sciences. It was originally called Google Life Sciences. And they're now doing some interesting stuff with medicine and technology. So Loon, if you remember last year, there was a terrible hurricane in Puerto Rico. And Google was able to deploy Loon in like 3 weeks to provide LTE coverage for what ended up being thousands of people. So phones would directly connect with the Loon balloons up in the air. And that was quite an impressive feat. And as an independent company, Loon plans to integrate with and work with telecommunication companies and carriers around the world, as well as like partners and governments and communities to bring the benefits of internet access to more people, end quote. So Loon actually makes a ton of sense. Like they could offer this technology to in need areas or other areas where there isn't cellular infrastructure as more and more people get online. But the more interesting company is Wing, I think, in that Project Wing has had a really rough history. They're in around 2015, 2016, it was like a really, seemed more ambitious. They were signing partnerships with carriers and they were trying to find to partner with a shopping delivery service in the UK, I believe. And they're also trying to work with Starbucks. But it appears that all these failed. And in 2016, I believe, Wing had to take a long pause. And now, obviously now, they have come out of it as an independent company, which Alphabet thinks it can stand on its own.
Yeah, so Wing did the Chipotle thing, right?
Yes, they did. In Virginia, people could order burritos and other stuff and get them airdropped. Airdropped.
Yeah, that was a fun headline when they announced that. It, you know, to say Google was getting in the business of burrito delivery or something.
That was a fun thing.
On Loon, I think it's interesting because I feel like Loon has always kind of positioned itself as, at least in the promotional marketing material and stuff that I've seen, it seems like they kind of try to approach it as like their altruistic company. Like we're bringing the benefits of internet to, you know, unreached populations or whatever. And so it sounds like an altruistic motive, but now it's interesting to see like, you know, they can't just be an altruistic, like we're bringing the internet to everyone kind of company anymore, because if their own, you know, they need to find some, you know, consistent sources of revenue and they need to turn it into a business. So it's going to be interesting to see how Loon evolves, you know, because, you know, you can't build a business on just giving away stuff, you know? So
yeah, it's, it'll,
so on the other hand, I guess it does make sense though, that, you know, like, I guess there may be telecommunication companies who maybe want to reach certain demographics or certain places that they may not be able to reach, or it may not make business sense for them to build towers there or whatever. And so balloons might be, I guess, an alternative. Like it's basically an alternative to a cell tower. So maybe that makes sense from a business perspective. We'll have to wait and see.
So moving on, we also had some Waymo news this week.
Yeah, so Waymo is, as we just mentioned, probably one of the more successful companies, or the most successful easily, companies to emerge from X and become its own Alphabet company. And I think it's actually probably one of the main justifications for the Alphabet structure to exist at all. Because Waymo is, if you look at the breakdown of where Google's or Alphabet, so Google's value is, Waymo or projected or current value of Waymo as a business is growing every quarter. So, it's just really interesting to see, you know, everything that's happening with Waymo. I think it could potentially, we could potentially get to a point where Waymo is just licensing. It seems like a lot of companies are kind of faking it with self-driving, and a lot of companies are, you know, having problems. Like we know Uber had that issue where they, one of their self-driving test drivers was negligent and they ran someone over like a month or two ago. My timelines get mixed up because I'm on the internet all day, every day. Waymo, it seems like they're the most competent player in the self-driving space. Mm-hmm. And this week, Waymo got the very first all-electric I-Pace. So our Fred Lambert wrote this piece. He's the lead editor over at Electrek, and he very hilariously wrote, "It looks like adding 20,000 I-Paces to your fleet will get you priority on the delivery list," or something, which it makes sense because Waymo announced back in March that they're adding 20,000 of these Jaguar cars to its self-driving fleet.
Of 60,000 minivans also made by...
Yeah. So this business is exploding. And so this week, the very first all-electric I-Pace was delivered to Waymo, and Waymo is testing this car on the road. They're not testing it in autonomous mode quite yet. The official word from Waymo is that in these first tests, they're, quote, capturing design requirements for our hardware and software. So, yeah, if you're in the San Francisco area, you may spot one of these Waymo Jaguar I-Pace cars.
Being a Jaguar, it's a very nice car. I would get in that so much faster than a minivan if I had my choice. I'd pay an extra dollar to ride in that versus a minivan if the opportunity were to arise.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, when we finally, I'm anxiously awaiting the day that, I mean, Waymo's already doing pilot tests, but I'm anxiously awaiting the day that I can just call a Waymo from anywhere and hop a ride. It'll also be interesting to see how, I mean, something else to talk about, we can jump into our next topic, is that these self-driving companies like have very interesting and confusing relationships between one another. So, So Waymo's doing its own kind of pilot program, self-driving, and then Uber obviously is doing their own self-driving, have their own self-driving prospects, and you know, that has kind of blown up for them because of conflicts that they had with Anthony Lewandowski, who came from Waymo and stole their IP to go lead self-driving at Uber. And then, you know, Alphabet has this other partnership with Lyft to, like, quote, bring self-driving to the masses. And then another topic this week was Lime. So you may know them as the makers and providers of all those scooters you see all over the ground everywhere, or at least one of the companies. I think Lime and Bird are like the two main contenders right now. Are there a bunch of birds near you?
There are a bunch of limes near me.
Limes, okay. Yeah, I went to San Diego a couple weeks ago for a weekend, and the birds were everywhere. I didn't see a single lime, but like over on the coast in San Diego, like Pacific Beach, the birds were just everywhere. But yeah, so Lime raised a $335 million, or they raised $335 million at a $1.1 billion valuation in a funding round that was led by GV. So that's the Alphabet connection here. GV is one of Alphabet's, you know, subsidiaries.
Yeah.
And then also Alphabet participated directly in that funding round. And then interestingly, one of the other big participators in that round was Uber. So, you know, we're coming out of what was kind of like a rocky situation with the litigation between Waymo and Uber, and indirectly Alphabet and Uber. And now they're kind of buddy-buddy in raising money for Lime. And it looks like Uber is going to be branding some of these Lime. So like Lime bikes and Lime scooters are now going to be Uber branded and be offered through the Uber app. So,
which is gonna
that's interesting.
A wild thing to see.
Yeah, and then the other aspect of this is, I mean, we've seen, you know, little bits and pieces of weird partnerships going on. So, like, Uber was offering rides through Google Maps for a little while, which recently ended, like, a week or two ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. And then, you know, the other aspect of it is, like, Google Maps is kind of directly competitive to you know, some of these ride-hailing companies in a way. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see just like how all of this folds out, like where these partnerships end up. I'm hoping that I'll be able to book, like, from a consumer user end side of things, I'm hoping that I'll be able to just do everything through Google Maps. Like, I want to just be able to book self-driving Ubers and Waymos and Lyfts all through Google Maps and book all of my, you know, Lime bikes and scooters and everything else through Google Maps. That's kind of like the public transportation ideal future that I'm hoping for.
And it makes Google Maps, if I'm sure, like, that makes Google Maps such a key player. Like, where, right, all these different services, Lyft, Uber, and then all these bicycles, all these scooter services, we're heading to a future where you like need half a dozen apps or at least two to three to get around. And there's so much overload and management in that if Google Maps can play with everybody, if they can just become a receptacle of sorts to all these different services, that could be a very key advantage for Google. Of course, they need to remain some sense of neutrality for maps, but at the end of the day, this could be like a really key advantage of Google Maps versus something like Apple Maps.
Yeah, I guess the complicating factor there is that Waymo kind of wants to directly, it seems like they just want to directly take on Uber and Lyft in some ways. And but so, yeah, what?
On the flip side, Uber's new CEO has said like he would be fine with Waymo, like adding Waymo cars to the Uber network, because if in case their approach doesn't work out. Like at the end of the day, all these things they're all competing with each other, but they're all working with one another to some limited degree. And that is hopefully, if again, going to the future, I hope that is what wins out, because like having one app, be it Google Maps or what, some other service in the future, is something that the consumers will want.
Yeah, for sure. It's something I want. So yeah, that's pretty much, that rounds up, I think, our Alphabet coverage for the week, or for the 2 weeks. Some of this stuff is a little bit older because we didn't have a show last week. But yeah, we hope to do a little bit more of this, a little bit more talking about Alphabet specifically, given the name of the podcast, and Alphabet's various subsidiaries. So next up, we have Android P DP4. So speaking of old news, this is from early last week. So we're almost going on 2 weeks since this news. But we wanted to touch on it a little bit on this show because, you know, I think it's relevant and it's something people are talking about. And a lot of us have DP4 running on our phones right now. What do you think? I mean, have you been using DP4 on your daily or?
Yep. So DP4 or Beta 3 is the second to last developer preview at least for Google and Android P. And so far it is, I've been saying this since I think the second, even the honestly, the first developer preview, and by the second, this was quite stable. So yeah, I've been using it for at least 2 to 3 months right now. And it's getting ready for release. They're still adding new features, which is always the fun thing. In DP4, we had the ability to finally set a system theme, at least on Pixel devices. So depending on the wallpaper, you can theme how the notification shade, how the app pixel launcher, app launcher looks. But previously, that was just dependent on the wallpaper you set. Now there's actually a manual toggle in system settings display to set an automatic, which is again based on the wallpaper, or always set a dark theme or always set a light theme. And this is such a nice feature because I was one of those crazy people who would like Photoshop their wallpapers and just darken it to trick the system into giving me a dark theme. And I don't have to do that anymore. And it's brilliant. So that's one feature with DP4. And a second one was how there's so much more of the Google Material theme and DP4 with the icons. System-wide, they're adopting this new shape, this new... It's lighter, it's more of an outline design. Some of them are a bit bolder. So yeah, we see this in the nav bar. The back button is now just a caret instead of a chevron. In quick settings, in status bar and volumes, there are all these new icons.
Yeah, I wanted to say, I think if you took Product Sans or Google Sans, I guess, if you took that font and you translated it to an icon, that's pretty much what these look like.
Yeah.
That's kind of the feeling that it gives me, is like, you know, like they're bold-ish and they're like outlines. I don't know exactly how to describe the nuance of it, but that's what it makes me think of. It's like if you translated that font to these icon designs, that's what they look like. And I think they're really nice.
Yeah. So like one theme is they're not filled in. It's just bold outlines, which is, it makes it feel skinny, and it reminds me of iOS 7, but in a good way, in that it's refined, it's visually, like, the boldness is, like, a key part in making sure you can look at these and just not forget about it. and you can, so that's good glanceability. But yeah, these icons are everywhere, and I think it's a sign that we're Google Material theme is showing up everywhere, which is a very good thing.
Yeah, and then another big thing that launched in DP4 was that they did a pretty, I mean, I think it's big. You got to remember that, you know, we're Google bloggers, so we blog about a very specific niche of a niche of a niche. So, you know, what's big to us may be literally nothing to other people, but to me, it's big. This is a pretty big change to the gesture navigation in Android P. I guess the main thing that they did here was previously you would drag on the pill. I guess you like you would drag, and it seemed like the pill was riding on a rail of some sorts, like some sort. And now you, if you do the same gesture you would have done before, so previously you would have like dragged the pill to the right, and that would have opened up like the multitasking view. Now if you drag the pill to the right, it doesn't actually physically drag the pill. So you drag the pill to the right and it just opens up this kind of scrubber of sorts, which now you can drag all the way from like the left to the right on it. And it will let you, you know, easily move between the different apps in multitasking. And then the other thing was that they made the apps in multitasking when you are doing this gesture. I guess I'll just show it. So when you're doing this gesture like this, I don't know if it's going to be able to pop up like that. So when you're doing this slide gesture, for those who are listening on the audio, I apologize. I just showed something on the screen. It brings the apps up bigger, you know, to the forefront and hides the suggested app section at the bottom. So I think, I mean, I wrote a piece saying that it makes a big difference in fluidity. So I'll start off on the positive side of things, which I think it does. In my book, this change is a positive change. There's a lot more positive change that we need before I can use this on a daily basis. but to me, it does seem like, I don't know, it's hard to describe the nuances of this with words. If I was able to show it visually, then maybe I could explain better. But it just feels more fluid to me. It feels more natural. The old method felt like really mechanical, and it felt, it just didn't feel natural. And this, the upside is that, you know, you can just drag along this little scrubber at the bottom, and it lets you, I think it makes more sense to be able to drag all the way to the left yeah. and the right. I'm trying to think of a metaphor that would explain why I believe that, but I can't really come up with anything. It did feel weird to me that dragging the pill to the right, you know, you had the back button on the left side and then you would drag the pill to the right and you could only drag in this tiny little section on the right side of the screen. And to me, that required too much precision. Yeah, it required too much precision for you to be able to really do what you were trying to do. And so like lessening the amount of precision that you need to get to where you're trying to go is a win in my book. The downside of this change is that there's no visual indicator of what you can do or what you should do.
No.
And I guess that's your counterpoint on it.
That is my big complaint. It makes sense because, words. It makes the lack of an indicator makes sense because you can't really truly represent how much you slide if you think about it. Because most people have like 20 open apps. Google cannot make 20 tiny increments into this right. thin gesture bar anymore. But at right. the same time, I'm so much of a bigger fan of the old system purely because there's an indicator. I think Google could like seriously fix this by just adding on the current strip. If they could just add a tiny pill. Which could look exactly like
the oh, yeah.
old mm-hmm. button and just show a visual indicator. Like again, right. it doesn't make sense because once you're at the very left, it just keeps moving along. There's no way to visually represent how you're doing it in the good way. So it's just, you're just trying to make it available. But at the same point, I think that kind of reflects a not thought out system.
Yeah, so I think a helpful way to talk about this is to compare it to the iPhone 10. So if you're listening to this and you have an iPhone 10 on hand, it might help to grab it. So with the iPhone 10, if you say you're opening the Twitter app on both phones, if on the iPhone 10, if you swipe from right to left, it just takes you to your most recently used app, right? And it's the same on the Pixel. So going or swiping from right to left from the pill, or in the case of the iPhone from the center, just takes you to your most recently used app. That's helpful and that makes sense. The thing that I think makes the Pixel version less intuitive, or one of the things that makes it less intuitive to me, is that swiping from right to left, which is the opposite. So swiping from left to right takes you to the last app. Swiping from right to left is the opposite. On the iPhone, you get this like animation that shows like you're at the end of the list, like it bounces back. So like if you're in an app, it's the app you're currently using, you're trying to go the other direction, you know, the app, I'll just show it. So like on the iPhone, you do this and it's like showing you, like, you can't go that far. You can't go anywhere. Like that's like a visual representation of what you're trying to do. And it's saying, no, you can't do that. If you swipe the other direction, it, you know, takes you to your most recently used app. On the, I don't know why I have this tweet open, but I'll just do it for the sake of the demonstration. On the Pixel, swiping back to the most recently used app makes sense. So like swiping goes to the most recently used app. And then if you swipe the other direction, it doesn't give you that same visual feedback of what, like, I think having the visual feedback of what you're doing and why what you're doing either works or doesn't work, I think that contributes a lot to the intuitiveness of, you know,
how does the iPhone 10 make use of vibration? Are there vibration indicators or response? Is there haptic feedback, basically?
Yes. So the haptic feedback happens when you are opening the multitasking. So like if you're in an app and you swipe up, just like swipe up completely, it just closes the app, right? Which I think that's the ideal scenario. And like Google, I just want you to copy that. But so that doesn't give you any haptic feedback. If you drag up to open the multitasking and then hold it there for a second to open the multitasking, it gives you that haptic to let you know, okay, you've successfully held or whatever. And then it's basically the haptic telling you it's okay to let go, and you can let go. And then it just gives you the multitasking to swipe right and left. And then on the, you know, swiping left and right between apps, you know, to quickly multitask, it doesn't give you any haptic at all. So, and that's fine to me. I mean, I've many times said that it feels exactly like using the four-finger gesture on a MacBook whenever you're swiping through full-screen apps. It's exactly the same kind of idea to me, and I think it makes a lot of sense, and I just wish Google would do it.
You mentioned how you wish that a swipe up would close the app and take you back to your home screen. I actually vehemently disagree with that. Because it seems more, it's a beautiful gesture, it's a beautiful visual on iOS, but it seems like the movement, the like flicking of apps around, it's playful, but to me at least, it's too playful. And I like also on how you access the multitasking on iOS by going up and holding that.
Yeah.
Also doesn't seem intuitive to me, but that's just me.
Yeah, sure. It's not perfect, that's for sure. It's not, but it feels more intuitive than what we currently have with Android P. My take on one of the things that is obviously an issue with doing the swipe up to go home, which we've noted this in a previous podcast, but that's something that internally we've heard that Google's actually testing. So they've actually, they're actively considering doing that. I mean, that doesn't mean we'll see it in DP5, but you know, this is something that's actively in development, as we've mentioned on a previous episode of Alphabet Scoop. And, so anything can change, but I guess the problem on the Android side of things is that swiping up to go home, you'd be compromising a lot. So the reason the iPhone can do that is there's no app drawer, first of all. And so swiping up to go home and the confusion of like where you should swipe to open an app drawer or open the app drawer or open multitasking versus just swipe to go home, That could be, you know, because that is such an ingrained gesture for Pixel users. Swiping from the bottom to the top is ingrained in us that that opens the app drawer, at least on the home screen. And so suddenly changing that on people to be from opening the app drawer to closing an app is a very, you know, it's a very stark contrast, and it would probably be hard for users to get used to, but maybe that's the next step. Maybe the next revamp of Nav is going to be a year from now and they'll finally go all in. But I think, I don't know, I've used the OnePlus 6, I've used the Pixel 2 XL extensively, and I've used the iPhone 10, and the iPhone 10 version is not without compromise. That's for sure. Like you said, when you're in an app and you have to drag up and wait for that haptic feedback to let go, that is not ideal. But what I found, so the compromise with the iPhone 10 that I've realized is that I don't multitask that way anymore. There's two ways of multitasking. You can swipe left and right on the bottom of the screen to go back and forth between your most recent, it makes sense to go back between maybe your most recent three apps. If you go back before that, then you're swiping like a dozen times, you know, to get there. But going between the most recent three apps, it's just really easy to just swipe on the bottom of the screen and switch between apps. And so what I find myself doing is, unless I know I'm going digging for an app that's like way back there in the multitasking, I will just swipe on the bottom of the screen. And I don't even open up the multitasking view ever.
What's your thought on that? I'm increasingly doing that as well. Like, instead of opening multitasking, but the big but is that it's not accurate enough. I find myself missing apps. What Google did here, it's not precise enough. It's so annoying because when you go left again, you have to go back to that position.
Yep.
When you accidentally make a mistake, you have to go back 5-6 apps back. It's not, the positioning doesn't stay the same. And that is so annoying. But it's somehow more natural. And I know it takes more time, but because it's there, I feel like that's become a default behavior of mine. But it's not good.
Yeah.
Accuracy-wise.
Yeah. And that's why, I mean, to me, the iPhone method I honestly don't even care if you get rid of the app drawer at this point. And I know that that's like heresy to most Android users, but I would sacrifice the app drawer to get
return to the old multitasking view. Try to make it, you know?
What I'm saying is I just want to be able to swipe on the, I mean, I've just found in my using of the iPhone 10 that swiping on the bottom of the screen to get between apps the same way you would on a laptop, using a gesture on the trackpad, makes so much sense, and it's so easy. And it's it's better to me than clicking multitasking and swiping around, finding that app, or, you know, and it's way better than the gesture in Android P right now, where you're, like you're saying, it's so, the granular control is so hard to control. You know, it's so hard to get your finger in the exact right place to get to that exact app that you're trying to get to. And so, you know, that's frustrating. And then also it's frustrating to swipe up to go to the multitasking screen and then have to swipe through and look for it and then find it and then tap it. And all these methods, so in my view, in the last like 3 months of testing all this stuff, in my view, the best solution that I found so far is swiping on the bottom of the screen to switch between apps on the iPhone. And it's completely replaced the multitasking view for me on that thing.
It's so inefficient if you really think about it. It's, unless you know where it is, it's not efficient.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like with a little bit more use, you get a sense of where your apps are. So like, you instinctively get an idea of like, I know that I used the Safari app 2 apps ago. So I was in Safari and then I went to Twitter and now I'm in Instagram. I get a sense of, I know that I used Twitter, whatever, 2 apps ago. So I'm just going to swipe back twice. And so it's like swipe, 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 and then you're there. Or I know I used YouTube 3 apps ago, or I know that most of our multitasking gestures are just going to the last app, right? Yes. And so, like, that's almost all of it. Like, it's probably like 75% of the multitasking gestures you're doing. And in that case, the Android P1 is fine because it's just a swipe from the center to the right. Get used to that and you're good.
Yeah.
But I like, that's I guess the point that I'm hitting on is if you extensively use the system, you get a sense of when you used which apps, and it's really easy to just swipe back and say, okay, swipe, I'm there. I'm exactly where I need to be. And that's, I don't know. It's easy. So that's my, that's my take on gesture nav. And I think I'm excited to see what Google does, because they've been making gradually making changes for the last few developer previews, yeah. And it's gotten better every time. So I don't care. It doesn't have to copy the iPhone. I just want it to feel natural. Oh, another thing I wanted to mention just real quick, and I mentioned this on Twitter and I had a lot of replies like, oh, I didn't even mention that until you noticed it. So I hate you. If you switch off the nav or the gesture nav and you go back to the regular home button, the home button, and this was the case with the original Pixel as well, and I'm writing a post about this, so you can expect it later today or this weekend or something. On the original Pixel, if you tap the home button or you tap any of those buttons on the bottom, the back button or the multitasking button, the responsiveness was super high. Like, it was like almost zero latency, and I really appreciated that. You know, you tap the home button, you immediately feel that haptic feedback. It feels really satisfying, and you immediately like go home, or in the case of multitasking, open up multitasking or go back. Whatever you're doing, it felt super responsive. This is a very nitpick. It's very much a nitpick, and it's very minor. But with the gesture nav, so like with the pill button on Android P DP4. Or DP3 or DP2, if you tap the pill, it's just ever so slightly delayed compared to the previous. Because I guess I've tested it a lot, and I guess what they're doing is they've put a little bit of a delay there. I think it's like 0.2 seconds, maybe even less. Maybe it's like 0.1 second. I don't know. But they've put a little bit of a delay in there to wait and see if you're making the swipe up gesture or if you're doing the tap gesture. So this is one place where the mixed metaphor system causes a problem, because if you didn't have to wait to see if the user was going to swipe up, then you could immediately go home, and it's pretty close to immediate in the current build, but it's farther from immediate than the original Pixel and from the Pixel 2 on the previous nav. So I mean, it bothers me. It bothers me that I tap the pill to go home and I can feel that the haptic feedback is just ever so slightly delayed. That's coming from me, a power user of Pixel, and obviously I'm 99.9% of users would not care or not notice. But that's just something it was a very minor attention to detail that Google had with the original Pixel that set it apart in my book. And I am sad to see that immediacy go away if they do make this gesture nav default.
What's on that up? Note of what most people use, do you think most people are going to use the more advanced features of gesture navigation, like swiping light to access the previous app, or going even further? Is the average user going to do that? Is it discoverable enough? Is it obvious enough to the user that they're going to even use any of these features? Or will they be satisfied with these single gestures that take them like one swipe up to recents, or just one swipe light to access the last previous app? Are they going to use any more of these advanced features?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. And I mean, one of the problems is I feel like none of them are obvious. Like,
yes, none of them are obvious.
It's like they're going to need to have some kind of like intro to gesture nav, you know, pop up or whatever. I mean, I know that the iPhone 10 has one. You know, in the original setup of the iPhone 10, there's like, hey, FYI, you've used a home button for the last 10 years. Now it's not a home button anymore. You need to swipe. And that's basically all it tells you. And it seems like, my question is Google going to make this default? Is this even going to be default? It seems like, I mean, I don't know. Are they confident? I think it might depend. It might depend on how confident they are that it's good enough by the time the Pixel 3 launches. Mm. I feel like I feel like with the Pixel 3, if they feel like it's up there and up to par and comparable or better than the iPhone, then they'll make it default and they'll just bite the bullet. And if it's not, you know, they're just going to decide to stick with the three buttons and make it an option for a year, and hopefully they'll have it better by next year.
Yeah.
Or
but again, like at the end of the day, mixed metaphors is what's happening here. And I'm not sure about you, but watching I.O., watching the Android section of I.O., when they announced this, I didn't think they had a strong enough case for why they're doing this. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's totally reactive to the iPhone. I mean, in a way. I mean, so like we all know that Android OEMs have been playing with Gesture Nav for years, but it seems like I don't know. I mean, with the iPhone, it was necessary because they were getting rid of a physical button that they had before, and so they had no option. You know, if they're going to get rid of the physical button, which they wanted to do because they have had this dream of a all screen iPhone for 10 years, according to Johnny Ive, then they had to do this because they were getting rid of the main system for navigation. On the Android side of things, almost every Android phone has been software based for a long time, and so there's no real like motive to do this other than, I mean, so like one motive I think is they need to, I guess feeling or seeming modern is one thing, you know. Yeah. Doing it because the iPhone does it, and because the iPhone seems modern and new, and so that's from a perception side, like they want to seem to be like updated and modern. And the other thing is
just totally valid.
Yeah, that's valid. That's fine. That's fine. Obviously, Apple has been successful. I mean, so like it's significant, I think, and I'm going to mention this in my piece, but it's significant, I think, that we went a year since the iPhone X's launch. And, you know, iOS 12 is rolling out later this year, and Apple has made almost no changes to its gesture navigation. So everything that they did, like all those decisions that from a design standpoint that they made before the phone even launched, they have stuck them through. And apparently, you know, they were the right decisions, because if they weren't the right decisions, they would have tweaked things or changed things. But almost nothing is different. Yeah, like one of the weird things for me on the iPhone 10, was the, you know, dragging from the top right corner to open up Control Center, whereas dragging from the middle or dragging from the left would bring down notification shade. So it's like you're mixing like three different sections where you could drag, and one of them does something different than the other two, and that seemed like a really bad design decision to me. But you know, here we are a year later, and they haven't changed it. And so maybe that's just a compromise of the hardware or the, you know, the setup. But on the Android side of things, like it's like a perception thing. I think it's they've seen Apple can do it, so they should probably do it. I mean, it's they've seen Apple prove that it's possible to do it well, right? And then I guess another thing is iPhone users switching over. So like, you know, people who have been using an iPhone 10 for a year and they might want to switch to a Pixel 4, you know, is it going to feel like the Android phone is outdated, or is it going to feel unfamiliar, yada, yada? So I think that the familiarity aspect and being able to use both platforms interchangeably is a factor there. What do you think? Is there anything else I'm missing?
No, I think that covers all the points. Just modernness is...
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, I can't think of hardly any other motivation, because to me, at least in the current state of things, it seems worse than the buttons. hopefully it'll evolve. So yeah, next up we have Android notifications. So this is the big alphabet scoop of the day. So Android notifications go ahead. You got it.
I was just going to say that Android P, the big thing in Android P was recents, what we just spent half an hour talking about, redoing the gesture navigation. And it's just natural it's just natural progress for the next thing that they take a look at to be notifications in a significant way.
Yeah, so, you know, usual alphabet scoop disclaimer, this is from one person. who we believe has access to privileged information. So we don't have a ton of confidence in this. Take it with a grain of salt. And it's also something that we don't have any timeline on. It doesn't say, we don't know if and when this will ever launch. It's just something we're hearing that Google's working on. So apparently Google is working on a complete radical overhaul of Android's like notification system, or, you know, they're at least testing some different ideas. And apparently the bigger overarching goal of this overhaul is to, simplify the notification shade. So as we all know, notification shade can get a bit messy and you know, confusing for the average user. And so the goal is to make it, make the notification shade more simple and make it less text heavy. So that's part of, I think, one of the problems is that you open the notification shade and you've got like 20 notifications that are all just full of text, and it's just hard to get a grasp on what's what and what's important and what you need to act on and what you don't. So here's the TLDR on this. So apparently this new system gives the notification shade some buttons at the top. So you know how you have the quick toggles or quick setting toggles in the notification shade currently? Like, for instance, on my Pixel 2, I have Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, flashlight, et cetera, et cetera. So those are what I have. Apparently in this new notification overhaul, they're testing little bubbles below those in like a separate section that represent different apps. So you may have Instagram right under the Wi-Fi icon. You may have, you know, Facebook under the Bluetooth icon. You may have an icon for Gmail under the flashlight icon, and so on. And apparently the gist of this system is that you're not shown any like layered notifications by default. You just open up the notification shade, you tap on one of these icons for whichever respective app that you want to look at notifications for, and it brings down the usual. So it basically categorizes all of the usual notifications that you're used to seeing in your notification shade on Android into app divided like buttons at the top. So what are your thoughts? I mean that's basically the gist, right?
Yeah, they're trying to simplify, as you said, they're trying to simplify text-heavy stuff. And to preface this, I think Android notifications are such an important advantage for the platform compared to iOS that if you thought the outcry to the gesture navigation was wild, wait until they do something very radical to notifications. So with that out of the way, like, this is a big idea. It's a big overhaul because they're trying to build for the average user. Like, if they're trying to figure out why they're doing this, the average user might be inundated with that list of notifications. Whereas, and switching to icons, a row of icons presumably would be visually so much less cluttered. And the idea of just you having to tap the notification to tap the icon of the notification, to see the full textual notification, it's simple, but at the same time, it requires a lot of interactivity with the notification shade, which is at the very top of the screen, mind you. And yeah, as phones get taller and taller, the idea that Google seems to have with this particular take on the notifications is that there's more interactivity on top of the screen, that people are pressing and tapping and moving. The one thing we heard is that long pressing on the notification icon would open the app directory, so you could just skip seeing the notification. And it's like this idea that if you see a notification, you immediately want to go to it rather than, you don't even need to see what the actual notification is. You just know that there's something in there that you want to take a look at.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a fair idea. But at the same time, like, you have to tap to six, in theory, you'd have to tap to these row of icons to see everything. I hope there's a way to like see every single notification, which again, this is like they're trying to balance simplicity for the majority of the average user, and a more pro level, which I fully admit is just speaks to a few users that want to see everything all the time, versus like I think a regular user would be fine seeing this, their six latest notifications.
Yeah, so and I think another thing that's notable is a lot of the advantages of Android's notification system. It doesn't seem like they really are like going away in a sense. Like it seems like all the, you know, all the interactability you have with notifications, like being able to quick reply from them and stuff like that that we have on Android is going to stay the same. It just seems like they're adding another layer or another gate, I guess. I guess you could say like another gate before you see them. So, and then I guess the other thing is I don't know if we've talked about this in the show before, but Android's notification system is known for having this like tiered priority setup. So like really important notifications may appear at the top. So like that's how the notification state has always worked. So like important notifications that need your attention right now, the system knows like this is a text message, this is from a messaging app. So we're going to put that at the very top. And, you know, that's something that's like an action item that you need to act on. And then something like an email is like, that's not super urgent. It's something that you may want to know about. But it's not something that you probably need to reply to right now. You know, it's not like your friend saying, hey, I arrived at the restaurant, where are you? It's like maybe something about, you know, your bank account that you don't need to look at until you get home. And then the other tier of notifications is like, I think, you know, like Android system notifications, which are like sign into a Wi-Fi network or weather, you know, like these other kind of like passive notifications. The notification system is Android has always put those at the bottom. So basically, it seems to me like they're replacing that, which is smart and it makes a lot of sense. And it's a lot of the reason why Android notifications have always been better on have always been better than iOS or have been better for
too.
Smarter for a long time. It seems like they're replacing that with, you know, they're basically getting rid of the clutter and putting it all behind little icons. So, I mean, I don't know. We don't know if this is coming for sure. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not coming to Android P. So this is an Android Q, Android Q or Android R, or maybe, like, I don't know, who knows. At this point, it's just something that they're testing internally. Like we said, but it is interesting to see that, you know, just as iOS has finally kind of sort of caught up with, you know, now iOS is bundling notifications and it makes a lot more sense now on iOS, and it's been absolutely horrid on iOS. Now it seems like Google's even more forward thinking. They're saying, okay, well, we're already the best notifications. Let's see if we can make it better for the average person. And yet, I mean, again, this is a tension that happens on Android all the time between, it seems like Google's building features for the iPhone user or building features for the Pixel user. And then the other tension is power users who hear news like this and they're like, no, that sounds terrible. And I would almost guarantee you that that's the reaction that anyone who's listening to the show right now is going to have. It sounds terrible. It sounds like you're taking away my information density. It's like the redesign of Reddit. It's like, no, like I want text on white pages. Like, that's what I want.
Reddit can take away old compact design from my cold tab.
cold dead tab. I mean, it looks like they're forward looking.
They're thinking about it. Yeah.
Right. That's good.
What you want them to be.
Right.
What's next?
Right.
But at the same time, again, it's so much of a balance issue, as we've seen this year with gestural navigation. Like, right. Another thing I've just thought about is what happens if you have more than six notifications?
Right.
If they span, are they going to add a carousel or a second tier or a second row? Like, the questions, like, they keep on coming. But at the same time, I think, like, the average user might like this a lot. Like, we've seen them even on non-notch phones. The status bar in Android is limited to 4 or 5 right now, and everything else becomes dots. So, like, they're moving. This might be a digital well-being thing with a focus on, like, streamlining people's lives and making them easier to read. So this is just, like, this is a big thing. And I think if this happens, it might be way more controversial than gesture navigation this year.
Yeah, and then the question becomes, do you just make it a toggle? Old notifications, new notifications.
That's,
you know, like that's a whole philosophical argument. Do you want to just make everything a toggle? I mean, the settings app on Android is already getting kind of crazy, in my opinion, in terms of like, I mean, I can't, it's a good thing that settings has search, because I have, it's almost impossible to find what you're looking for at this point.
So I don't want to go too deeply into this, but like the nerd response for all these things is always add an option. And
yeah,
why not is the question. Like, I, at this moment, like, we have that choice with the gesture navigation, the old on-screen buttons. What is so long?
The philosophical argument against add an option is not that, it's not that that one option is bad, you know? It's like,
sure,
it's that the mentality of add an option ends up having a, you have a, you have a cable box remote that has 1,000 different buttons on it. You know, it's like, and so you, what you started with was one innocent option becomes a mess of stuff that eventually needs to be cleaned up.
Yeah, and you'll never get people to use a new thing if you let them keep using the old thing.
That's true. And that's another thing, is pushing people forward into what they don't know that they want, I guess.
But don't you think like make it a developer option? I don't know. I'm just spitballing.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, honestly, like, that's probably the best balance to the tension problem we have on Android. And this is not as much of a problem on the iPhone, because even power users just, they, I think they kind of have the mindset of Apple can do no wrong. And I think that would be a great, compromise on Android, is if all these options that they're adding for people, if they just put them all under that hidden developer options panel, like make developer options, like literally make developer options like 500 options, just dump everything in there that everyone wants a setting for and make it hidden for the average user, so that, you know, so that Google can still make principled design decisions for what most people would probably use.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my take. All right. So I think that pretty much rounds out the story on Android notifications. What else do we have this week? We can just round out a few little things. We had the Galaxy Note 9 popped up in a couple of leaks. It's looks entirely boring, in my opinion, and completely ignorable, because it looks like it's just another Galaxy Note 8. And I wasn't even really that interested in the Galaxy Note 8 in the first place. So I'm a pass on that front.
However, we are all very interested to see what Samsung ends up doing with Wear OS if something happens. Gear 4, is it, or the Galaxy Watch?
Yeah, that's... so the Gear S4, and it, according to a report from Yonhap News, which is a Korean publication, pretty reliable, they say that Samsung's doing one watch at IFA, and LG has two watches at IFA, and they're all going to be running Wear OS. So it looks like we're going to have see a little bit of a rebirth of Wear OS next month. Hmm.
That is exciting.
Little mini rant on the Galaxy Tab S4. Sorry, Abner. mini rant on the Galaxy Tab S4. Why are you still doing Android tablets, Samsung? Can this thing please run Chrome OS instead? Because I want that device with Chrome OS really bad.
Which you reviewed today. Which you reviewed
I did a little review on the Chromebook Tab 10. I published it this week. My take is Chrome OS on tablets is not ready yet. We need better hardware, and Chrome OS needs to be more thoughtfully designed for people who are using no keyboard. Like, we need Gboard. That's one thing. Some of the tab targets are still really small on Chrome OS. The Tab 10 is an education tablet, and so hardware-wise, it kind of sucks. So, yeah, I would love to see a Tab S4 running Chrome OS with some improvements on the software side. I mean, that would be a dream machine for me. And I'm hoping that that's the direction that this category is going. I would love to see convertibles running Chrome OS at this point. Yeah, so another thing that happened was the Google Store Summer Sale. I mean, the most notable deal on that was $150 off two Home Maxes. So you spend $800, you get $150 off for your DJ setup.
Oh, just like split it with a friend. I don't know. $75 is a nice chunk.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, that's true. But I think we'll see better
shipping. The shipping of that gigantic heavy thing it's not worth it. That's the problem of like buying it with somebody else.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, buying two yourself and then shipping it to a friend. I thought you were talking about Google Store shipping, which is free. But yeah, buying it yourself and shipping to a friend, it's like that would probably be like a $50 shipment by itself.
Yeah. So yeah, that's swiping out the window.
We had a few app updates, right? We had Google Pay.
Yep,
Chrome.
Google Pay. The Google Pay one is actually kind of nice. So it adds dedicated passes tab. It adds peer-to-peer old Google wallets sending to people. But again, like the big thing is passes. So your boarding passes, your movie tickets, they're now in their own separate tab, and they're not in the same one as your credit cards and debit cards to pay with something. And that is such a nice change, because that risks us getting so full. And the other nice change is that you can now send money to friends in one app. And presumably, Google is getting rid of Google Pay Send eventually. Just touching out some other updates. Google Assistant, the eight voices are now they're now assigned a color, and that's how they're being referred to, with this entirely new interface to pick them, to select them in seconds.
Side note there, I think there's a Googler that's listening to Alphabet Scoop, because we actually mentioned a couple weeks ago that I mentioned it would be really cool if the different colors like represented like the timbre or the style of the voice. And then in the little PR note that we got about it when it launched, Google specifically wrote, "No, the colors do not have anything to do with the style of the voice. So make sure you make that clear to your readers." So, yeah. So I'm hoping. I mean, maybe if you're a Googler and you're listening to the show, give me a wink. Yeah, send me a wink or something so that we know. Yeah, and welcome. we also had Chrome 67, Google Duo, Google Keep.
Yeah. Google Keep adds grid lines, so it's better for drawing. Google Duo now supports multiple devices and tablets, which is finally. It really needs to come to the web in some form or fashion so that it could replace Hangouts, who knows. And Chrome 67, which was released a few weeks ago, Google announced that 99% of all users are using a new security feature called Site Isolation. It's designed to combat Spectre. It's the CPU vulnerability. And basically, it just runs sites in their own separate process so that any content can't be hijacked. It's sort of just site isolation. It isolates and separates everything to their own thing to prevent data theft. And that's a security feature that, according to Google, does use more RAM, but it's not in a significant enough fashion that it should impact usage at the end of the day.
Cool. Well, thanks for those app updates. So next week, I think we've been babbling long enough. Next week, we are probably going to take another off week because I'm going on vacation. So that will be fun. It's also been pretty slow news wise this summer, so it makes more sense to talk every other couple weeks than try to come up with things to talk about. So we'll probably skip next week, but we'll be definitely back on for the Friday after that. We've also thought about changing the day we stream. So we've thought about doing on Wednesday or Thursday. If you have any thoughts on that, be sure to send me
what's convenient for you guys.
Yeah. What works for you? Yeah. Send us some feedback on Twitter, or you can find an email over at 95google.com. So until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week on YouTube. We record this podcast every Friday and publish every Saturday morning for now. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, which we just published our review of earlier today, so check that out, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And thanks again, Abner, for joining us once again for Alphabet Scoop, episode 17.
Bye.